Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from San Luis Obispo. Come along and join us for a conversation with Katya Sengel, an adjunct professor of journalism at Cal Poly. Long ago, she was stationed and based in Ukraine, right after the coup, correct?
A bit after. I was there 2000 to 2003, so it was less than a decade after the fall of the Soviet Union, so I kind of call it the post-Soviet times. Mm-hmm. And I was working as a journalist, and before that, I had been in that very general area of the world. I was 5 years, because before that, I was in Latvia for about a little over a year, and then Ukraine. And yeah, so it's a very close to me.
Resonating and ringing with your soul today, correct?
Yeah, I've had a memoir about my time reporting there that came out a couple years ago. And so that was one kind of look back. And then since this has happened, I was doing, Smithsonian had asked me, I do some writing for them to do an article looking at some of the history. And it was pretty fun because you get to do hyperlinks in the article. And I actually was able to hyperlink to an article I wrote in 2002 from Ukraine.
Lives on forever.
Exactly. Yeah. Surprised, a lot of my older articles you can't find because it was 2002 and 2003.
You've maintained some friendships in Kyiv.
Yeah, some definitely ones are still Facebook friends and things that I haven't been as close contact with. But I had just reconnected with my friend Sveta, who is a journalist. My closest friend, but also she was a translator. So she went with me on pretty much all the stories. I had learned some basic Russian, but I was never fluent enough to report. And so everything I did, Sveta did. And mm-hmm. So we went down mines in eastern Ukraine together. What are some of the other things? We talked with protesters because, as Sveta will tell you, they've had a lot of revolutions. But before the Orange Revolution, when there were protests, we did stories where they were camped out and we spent the night kind of seeing what things were like and stuff like that. And so we did a lot of reporting, and she is still there. And she got out of Kyiv and is now in Kharkiv, which is where her mother is with her son and her mother. But I WhatsApp Sveta and I email with her, but I don't look at the news too much because I don't want to see.
Too painful?
No. I mean, but I just can't tell you exactly what is there because I avoid that. I know her partner is in Kyiv. I said, is he safe? And she said, nothing in Kyiv is safe. Obviously, for a lot of other people, it's much more painful than for me or anything I have. You know, it's a distant connection, but it was my home. And I don't want to see the places I lived. It was also my youth. It's where I fell in love. My ex-husband's Ukrainian. And so it was my early 20s. It's like this beautiful time for me and this beautiful memories. And I don't want to see that destroyed. And obviously people have much more is at stake. And so my what little memories is nothing compared to. But yeah, so Sveta, she says she's just trying to survive. Fuel. Everything has gotten really expensive. So I've been actually have some family and friends who have sent me money, which I've been sending to her, which is complicated in itself because first my bank blocked the payments. Where is this money being wired to Ukraine? And then I couldn't, you know, a lot of the places charge a lot of money and I was trying to make sure she gets the most money. So I figured out another way in getting her some money. She says if they survive, everything will be destroyed. Right now, though, all she's trying to think about is just surviving.
What a disconnect from our society.
It is. It's funny. I'll do some talks like this or something, and Sveta, I'll be messaging her on WhatsApp, and I'm asking some things, and then she's like, oh, hold on a sec. The siren's going off again. And she literally signs off pretty much every message if we survive, because I keep saying, okay, more money will come Thursday or something, and she said, that's great, thank you, if we survive. And she's not a dramatic person. When I talked to her back in December, she was like, you know, that's when things were first amping up. And she was like, oh, don't watch TV. It's nothing. And so It's really hard to think about, especially because she's in Conneve now with her mom, and that was kind of my safe area too. I was young, and we'd go to Conneve to be taken care of her mom. I'd go there, and her mom would speak really slow, sweet Russian to me, and then hold my hand always and feed me. And I was like, it was like my home away from home kind of thing, where she'd just nurture me like a mom. And to think, now I can't do anything to help them, and they had been so nurturing and protective and helpful for me when I was there. And Ukrainians in general, when I was in Ukraine, everyone was so kind to me, and so it's really hard to think about what they're facing.
Interesting. But there's more of a dour and closed dynamic among the Russian people than...
For me, I put Putin separate from Russian people.
Right, sure.
It's Putin's war. But Sveta, actually, her family is from Russia originally. Her brother's in St. Petersburg. So, and I have some of my closest friends here are Russian. And I don't want to put individuals, I guess with any war, it's the politicians. Unfortunately, in Russia, media is so controlled and blocked now. Some Russians are getting very limited information, and so probably are they're buying that line. They might come across, differently and view things differently. And part of that's just so because they can't get the right information.
Right. And what they do get is propaganda.
Exactly. Because I remember when I was in Ukraine, I did a story. At the time, there was Chechen war, and Russians were being sent to fight in Chechnya. And I did a story about Russian mothers looking for their soldier sons in Chechnya. And those sons were, they're cannon fodder. They're really young. And I doubt things have changed much. I bet you a bunch of the Russian soldiers in Ukraine don't want to be there. And I think I saw a story about Russian moms looking for their sons again, because the government has no attachment to their people. Putin doesn't care about his people and if they suffer. And so basically he left those kids in Chechnya, and it was only the moms who cared enough to try and get them back.
And the Russian moms were having to contact Ukrainian moms to get through and communicate with their soldier kids.
Yeah. And so I think... I like both cultures, and both are...
Tell us what you were most attracted to, similarities of Ukraine and the Ukrainian people, and some dissimilarities.
You mean Americans?
With you, in your personal experience. When you came there, did you feel you were in an alien world, or did you feel a comfort?
Yeah. Well, at the time, so when I got there in 2000, it was funny because I'd been in Latvia before, like I told you. And at the time, whenever I'd notice I was getting on a plane and landing in an area that was post-Soviet or Soviet bloc, or that area, you get off and no one smiles and everyone's wearing black. And especially the men, shaved heads, black turtlenecks, and look kind of like thuggy or whatever. And the women, gorgeous, high heels, but no smiles. And so that was always, I remember when I got off in Ukraine, I was like, why'd I come back? It's like so unfriendly and not smiling. But once you get to know the people, so friendly, so kind. And especially, I think, because I was a young woman on my own, they just took me in. You know, it was just, I think that happens in a lot of places. And you know from traveling alone how you kind of just get taken care of more, but especially as a young woman. So I remember one story. We went to, it was outside Moscow, somewhere in Russia. It was with Sveta and a photographer who was my boyfriend at the time. And we had gone there, and was it New Year's Day or Christmas Day? It was some holiday. And we tried to contact the woman we wanted to meet beforehand, and she hadn't replied to any of our emails or anything. And so we just knocked on her door. We literally showed up, and it was a holiday, and they were having a meal. And she didn't want to talk to us. She didn't really want to talk to the press. But she invited us in and fed us because it was cold outside, because we were there. So it was that kind of thing where people would... I remember going to some more remote villages in Ukraine. They hadn't seen an American... Some of the older people hadn't seen an American before, especially an American woman. And I remember this one woman just wanted to hug me. She'd do that. And that was in eastern Ukraine. And at the time, there was no hot water at the hotel where we were staying. And it was freezing. It was winter. And it was so cold. We slept with our boots on, our hats on, everything. And we couldn't get hot water for tea. But somehow this old woman found me some like lukewarm water. It was lukewarm. It was not hot. But she did that, and she didn't have it for herself or anyone else, but she found it for me because I was her guest and I was there. And so just very friendly, beautiful, especially the older women were the best because they would speak really slow at the time in Ukraine, except Western Ukraine. Everyone was still speaking Russian. And so I learned some Russian.
So you learned Russian there?
Well, I started learning Latvian in Latvia, but Latvian doesn't get you so far, and so much to the upset of my Latvian friends. And a lot of my friends in Latvia were Russian Latvian. So I started learning Russian in Latvia. And then I continued it in Ukraine because Kiev, everything was in Russian at the time. It's changed since then. And so when I'd meet the older woman would speak very slow, sweet, simple Russian to me. So I could understand them and it was great. The older men would speak too fast and use a lot of slang and so I could never run it. But but the women were very patient and just like everyone was my mother. The women in general, my peers who were my age or a little older, like Sveta, they take care of me too. It was just like they kind of recognize I didn't know, you know, you should wear long underwear because it's so cold. I didn't, you know, I'm from California, I'm lost. And so they would just take care of me on those things. And Sveta to this day, she always calls me Katusha, the diminutive, and it's never Katya.
Looking forward, what's your feelings? I know.
I'm kind of like Sveta at this point. I'm like, I'm trying to see what I can do for her. And I don't take it beyond that because I don't know. It's really, really scary. I guess hopefully, I don't know. So many people are leaving. So much is being destroyed. And poor Ukraine has endured so much. I mean, so they'll, strong people, strong country, they've had their revolutions, they've had their famines, they've had so many things. And so they will, the people will, but it's going to be hard. yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Before we go, the book you gave me a couple years ago about Chernobyl, tell us about that book, the title, and where somebody would find that.
It's From Chernobyl with Love, Reporting from the Ruins of the Soviet Union. Local bookstores, just have them order it, or you can get it online.
And you went to Chernobyl. You got radiated.
I was Chernobyl four times. I kind of lose track. The first time was right when they were shutting down the last reactor because reactors were still working, some of them, just not the one that had exploded. And that was in 2000. And then I went back to write a year, around this couple months later, 6 months later, to write about the older people who had decided to live in the exclusion zone. And then another time I went, I think, to report about some of the initiatives in the exclusion zone a little further, like the scientific things going on, and then some of the business startups a little further outside the exclusion zone. In the book, Sveta is actually, you'll see pictures of her, and she figures prominently in the book. It's actually dedicated to her and the other women, but her name is there. So
that's really cool. Katya Sengel, thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been visiting with Katya Sengel, adjunct professor of journalism at Cal Poly State University in San Luis Obispo. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.